Hello and welcome back. This is the third class in our crash course on the 39 prohibited categories of created labor, meaning that which cannot be done on Shabbat. Today we'll be covering two of the melachot. We'll be covering zore, which is winnowing, and we'll be covering borer, which is selecting and sorting. As we begin, vahazore, well, what exactly is winnowing? Well, if you recall, right now we've been working through the order of bread, meaning the category of melachot, the category of prohibited labors that are specifically connected with the concept of growth, vegetable growth, all the way through the process of preparing that. And the reason being, as you recall, that in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, there is a difference of opinions as to what exactly, the creation of the Mishkan, there were, and also the Beit HaMikdash, there was the baking of what's called the Lechem HaPanim, which was the showbread that would be regularly changed every week. And these breads, therefore, being needing to make them, there was the whole process from planting the seed all the way through its actual baking process. The other opinion is that specifically this was in connection to the creation of the dyes that were used for dyeing the various curtains, etc., that were used in the Mishkan, that were used in the creation of the tabernacle. So winnowing, where does that fit into in the process of baking bread? Well, if you recall from last week, we talked about the idea of the after having grown the actual seed, that then we go ahead and it's cut down and it's bundled together, and then it's brought to the threshing floor where it's put on the ground, and then the kernels are broken open. And once they're broken open, what you're left with are the food kernel and the chaff, the lighter material that was originally surrounding the kernels. So what is done then is, in order to remove the chaff, they would go ahead and they would stick in a pitchfork or whatever else have you into this mixture of chaff and kernels, and they would throw it up into the air, and when it was in the air, the wind would blow, and that would shoot away the chaff and leave behind the grains to fall to the floor. So this was one of the processes of removing and getting rid of the chaff. And this is the process that's called zore, winnowing. So what does this mean in terms of the category of malacha, in terms of the creative labors that we cannot do? It specifically means separating undesirables from food items by moving air. Now, that's the first understanding. That is the first understanding of what it means to say winnowing. The second explanation, now this first explanation is what's brought down in the Gemara Bavli, what is brought down in the Babylonian Talmud. The second opinion is brought down in the Yushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, which predates the Bavli, and it holds that the key concept, the category of winning, is not necessarily just about removing the undesirables from the food by moving air, but it's actually the scattering or misting of anything by way of moving air. So it's a slightly different situation. One is concentrating or focusing on the removing of chaff, the removing of something undesirable by way of wind, where the second one is the fact that anything that is going to be scattered or misted by way of wind, by way of air, that's going to be a problem. Practically speaking, both of them therefore are of concern. The Shulchan Aruch brings down the first opinion, and the Ramah supports the second opinion, which practically speaking means that we need to be cognizant of both issues and be careful about them. So let's begin with the do's. What can we do? Well, what we can do is use deodorant aerosol sprays on your body. Not your clothes, but on your body. So what happens is the going ahead and taking a can and, again, both spray and spraying yourself. This is to make sure that you don't stink and that you don't cause problems for everybody else in the synagogue. He says this is an important matter on Shabbat. And again, so doing that onto your skin is not a problem. Now, the reason is like this. We just said before that scattering or misting by way of moving air is a problem. So why is this okay? Well, what happens is like this. When you have a can of aerosol spray, what's going on is that inside of that can is pressurized gases of one form or another, along with liquid that you actually want to be on your body. Now, what happens is this propellant, the gases that are inside this can, they will go ahead and they'll actually put pressure on the liquids to shoot out of the nozzle. So what happens is it's not wind that's causing a misting effect. It's not air, or it's not the pressurized gases that's causing the misting. The only thing the pressurized gases are doing are forcing the liquids out of the nozzle. And the nozzle itself, because it has small holes in it, or whatever else have you, causes the actual scattering of the material itself, meaning of the perfumes or the antiperspirants that are there. So similarly speaking, a person is allowed to add water to a cold vaporizer. Now, not a hot vaporizer, because that would actually be a form of bishul, a form of cooking, and that's a problem. But how does a cold vaporizer work? Well, what happens is you have this little container of water, and then right above that you have this disc that spins at a high velocity. And what happens is as the water is drawn onto the disc, it's flung at a very high speed out of the vaporizer, causing it to mist. So the actual cause of misting here is going to be from the force of the wheel shooting out the water, and not as a result, again, of the air or the wind that's going to cause a misting effect. So therefore, again, it doesn't violate the particular malacha of winnowing. So what can't we do? What falls under the don'ts? Well, what you can't do is blow away the thin peels of nuts. For example, you have peanuts in a bowl and you have those little red, you know, skins or whatever sitting around. You can't go over there and give a blow on it and cause those to shoot out of the bowl, leaving you behind with the nice little peanuts to enjoy. That's a problem. In fact, that's exactly the situation that you have in the case of winnowing. In other words, in the very traditional sense of that word. You can't blow, for example, little debris, like little leaves or anything else that might still be attached to fruits or vegetables. You can spit straight up in the air so that it falls in your face. I don't recommend this. But you can't spit into the wind. What happens is if you spit into the wind, then what that does is it causes that spittle to mist. And that would be a problem. That would be an example of that. You can't shake out a tablecloth, for example, into the wind, because as you're shaking this tablecloth and causing the crumbs to fly up into the air and fly off into the wind, you're causing the scattering of those crumbs. Now, at the same time, though, you would be allowed to take your tablecloth and put it, for example, over the garbage and give it a bit of a shake so that it actually allow it to fall right in. That's not a problem, because it's not the wind which is causing the problem here. It's, again, just the action of removing the materials. So the actual shaking of this tablecloth just causes all the debris to fall off into the garbage, and there's no scattering going on as a result of wind. So, again, no problem as far as winnowing is concerned. Now, there may be another matter, which is that the actual crumbs themselves, crumbs of bread and things along those lines, are something that the Gemara tells us we should be careful about, making sure that we don't throw them in the garbage and, you know, eat what we can. The idea is that crumbs, in other words, bread itself, represents the panasa, it represents our livelihood, and therefore being careful about the little pieces, again, of crumbs and things like that that happen to be falling at our table and not treating them with disrespect is something that creates a sort of segula, a sort of treasure. In other words, it's symbolic and says, listen, we're careful and we're concerned about what God gives us, and we hold those things to be of value. So in this regard, it's not particularly good to throw out these crumbs just straight into the garbage, but rather it's more proper to collect them and to feed them later to birds or whatever else have you, or to at least wrap them very well and then throw them into the garbage, so that it shouldn't be something, again, that's just this sort of off-the-cuff sort of just throwing away as if it has no value. For that same matter, a person has to be cognizant about the fact that you really shouldn't just, in other words, just in general, just go ahead and throw in, You shouldn't, for example, just take food from your table and turn around and give it to animals that may be in your house or in general. Or for that matter, if you happen to have good food, it's not really too proper to go ahead and give them to animals. Again, you have an obligation to feed animals, but food and foodstuff which is good and proper and has been set aside for human consumption isn't something that should immediately be turned around and given off to animals. And the reason is because it has a certain chashivut. It's been set aside. There's a certain importance. It's been put together for human use. So what a person can do is put them aside, and when they begin to decay, and meaning they're still, again, you know, nutritious and wonderful for an animal, but wouldn't be the sort of thing that you'd be serving your friends, then giving that to an animal wouldn't be a problem. But again, the idea is that this food now has been designated for something of a higher order, and therefore we don't want to show that we are lax in these matters and just letting it go. By the way, as a side matter, there is something else which is interesting, and that is that in general on Shabbat, you know, there is an obligation to feed your animals. If you have a dog, if you have a cat, or anything else that is your responsibility, you have an obligation to set food for them. So therefore, the same sort of concerns that we have, the same sort of permissibilities that may exist for humans, meaning things that we can do in terms of preparing food for humans on Shabbat, can also be done for animals. But in this case, we're talking about your animals. But wild animals, that's not the case. They're not for you, they're not your responsibility, and therefore it's not proper or allowed to feed wild animals. The one interesting exception to that is in the case that if you have a wild dog who is somewhat domesticated, meaning it's not vicious or an attacking animal, something like that, then in that particular case, it's actually considered to be meritorious to be able to set food out and allow that dog to eat it, even on Shabbat. And the reason for that is the Torah is concerned because a dog, meaning a wild dog, is something which, especially a hungry dog, is something which is, scrabby and not something that we're going to show too much pity on. It's just culturally speaking, people don't have the sort of approach where they see the animals, see a dog and have pity on it when it's in bad shape. So for that reason, the Torah takes a special concern and therefore opens the door and allows you to put out food because of the fact that if you don't, that dog may turn around and end up starving to death. So going a little further, you can't throw confetti into the wind, same sort of thing. Blow dust off of something. You know, if you have dusty books or things along those lines, you can't go and blow off the dust, as in that situation, blowing off the dust would be exactly this particular malacha of scattering. Blow the powdered sugar off a donut. Not sure why you'd want to waste the sugar, but basically if you needed to, again, blowing off the sugar is something which would again be this sort of dispersing. If anyone remembers, it was an absolutely horrible candy that used to exist as children. I don't mean horrible in taste, but horrible in the lessons that it teaches. Were these candy cigarettes, these gum cigarettes. And I remember as a kid, you take them, put it in your mouth, and you blow, and out puff would come a puff of sugar. That's a problem. Well, it's a problem because of the fact that it teaches all the wrong lessons to you and your children, but it's also a problem on Shabbat because that, again, misting, that spreading out, scattering of the sugar is a problem. Now, there is another type of dispenser for perfumes. It's also used in like old style dog food, old style bug sprays and things like that. And what is that? And that is, if you remember that, if you've ever seen these little, there's got a little glass bulb usually filled with, the perfume, and then there's a little rubber ball that's on the side, and you squeeze the rubber ball, and the air passes from the rubber ball through this little metal tube that has a straw going into that glass bulb with the perfume, and then poof, a little bit of mist of nice smelling perfume or deadly bug killer comes out the other side. So that sort of situation is using a principle called, there's a tube called a Venturi tube. And what that does is as the wind passes through, it creates a vacuum that sucks up through the straw the liquids that are sitting there in the bottom, meaning in that glass container. And at the same time then, the air that's passing over then actually, it's the air itself that mists the perfume or the bug spray into the air. So because of that, it is something which would be a violation of this melacha and therefore not be allowed. So therefore, these type of perfume containers, be careful about and not make use of on Shabbat. We're going to now begin, and this is going to be, since this is a crash course, I have to say, sadly, going to be a very brief presentation of perhaps one of the most complex of all the melachot, of all the 39 categories of prohibited labor on Shabbat. And this is the category of borer, selecting slash sorting. So we're going to do this a little bit different, in that in addition to just telling you what the actual melacha is, I'm going to give you a set of principles. These principles help define when borer applies, and also give you a couple of rules how to avoid being over, in other words, violating this particular melacha. So I'm going to go through the principles, and then we're going to do some practical do's and don'ts as we go through. Now, I realize this is complex, and therefore this is not the end all on the subject. Certainly, this is sort of just as a reminder as part of the crash course. At a future time, at a future course, hopefully, we'll take certain of the melachot. For example, this one being borer, dash, which we saw the last time, bishul, some of the more complex ones, and we'll set out to do complete little mini courses on those specific melachot themselves, in order for a person to familiarize himself with the depth and detail that applies to these specific melachot. So therefore, like I said, I'm apologizing in advance, but because again, this is a crash course, we're just going as an overview. So the principles are something which you're going to need to internalize, the do's and don'ts, and look forward to, God willing, in the future, a specific little mini course in itself just on this specific, very complex, in other words, specific melacha, specific prohibited category of work, which is selecting slash sorting. So let's begin this. Well, what is it in terms of selecting and sorting? For first of all, let's go back to the original process that was involved in the creation of the Mishkan. So after you've done winnowing, you've gone ahead and you've thrown up into the air the various grains with the chaff, and the wind has carried away the chaff, you are now left with grains on the floor, the threshing floor, and you're also left, though, still with some debris. So it's necessary then to go through that debris and actually start removing it using additional means. So it's this additional selecting, in other words, this additional selecting and sorting of that mixture that becomes an issue, and that's what we're going to be concerned about. So what is it? Any selecting or sorting of a mixture under the following guiding principles. By the way, again, because of the particular complexity of this, I would highly recommend downloading and taking a look at www.teachitumi.com/Shabbat, S-H-A-B-A-T. You will find there the Class 3 materials where I've laid out the principles in text, and you can go ahead and read along with us as we're going through. So the following guiding principles will teach us what is a situation where borer will apply and how we can avoid that. So first of all, when does borer apply? It only applies in a situation where there's a mixture of types. In other words, in order to be able to do any kind of selecting or sorting of a Torah violation, you have to first start out with a mixture of types. So what is a mixture when we say that? Well, mixtures aren't just, again, isn't just a whipping together anything. It can be one of these three different types. First of all, something which is mingled or interspersed. So little pieces of things that happen to be all together and interspersed amongst each other. That is a situation of a mingled or interspersed situation. The second possibility is a mixture that is embedded or attached. For example, a black spot on an apple. A black spot on a banana. So it's attached. In other words, it's part of the banana, but at the same time, it's separate and distinct by its color, texture, taste, and even name. And we'll get to that later on. The third category of possible mixtures, meaning that if we were to separate or sort from this, it would be a violation, is something which is absorbed or interfused. In other words, if you have something which has absorbed something else, so therefore, is interfused, where they're directly intertwined and connected with each other. So therefore, extracting something in that situation would also create a possibility for a Torah violation. Okay, so then what is a type? So again, we have a mixture of types. So this is what the types of mixtures, again, mingled, embedded, absorbed, those are the three types of mixtures of types. What possible types do we have? Distinct by taste. If you have two items that even if they look the same and feel the same, but they have distinctly different tastes, those distinct though that makes those two items distinct from each other. And if you happen to decide that you want to pick out one of the items for its taste, you don't like this one, but you like that one, even though they in every other way seem to be the same, but they taste different, so you say, no, the ones that taste like this I don't want, and you pick them out to discard, you have violated the Torah. In other words, you have violated Borer. The second possibility of defining what is a distinct type is distinction by name. Now, when I say name, I don't just mean how you call it, but let's define it in terms of the totality of this principle, meaning of distinct by name. And that is, if it has a different purpose. Things which have different purposes are considered to be distinct. So mixtures of things that have different purpose, mixtures of things that have different function, mixtures of things which are of different categories. In other words, again, we define them. We say, this is this group, this is that group. Categorical by size. For example, if you had a mixture of spoons, well, that's just a bunch of spoons. In terms of category, if you had silver spoons and bronze spoons, well, that's, there you go, that's a categorical situation. But even if you had the same spoons, they're all the same, they're all bronze spoons, but then you had a teaspoon and a tablespoon, those are categorical by size. So therefore, a mixture of the two, and you want to pick out the tablespoons, leaving behind your little teaspoons, that's going to be a problem. Broken versus whole. You have a little bowl of cashews, and you want to pick out the broken ones to leave yourself with these nice, juicy, whole ones. That's a problem. And packaging, the way things are packaged and put together, that can again make a distinction. All those types of distinctions are basically called distinctions by name. For example, if you had different pieces of cake that were cut and are slightly different in size, they're not categorically different. They're small pieces of cake and larger pieces of cake, but they're all pieces of cake. They don't gain a distinction in their name. On the other hand, the example we gave before of broken whole cashews, these are cashew pieces and these are cashews, and the fact is if you go to the store and you want to purchase them, they cost considerably different based on the size and number of whole cashews that come in the can. So the fourth principle, and here we're getting into the fourth principle, begins now our set of sort of workarounds. So number four is, in other words, when can you do selection? In other words, you can't pull things out of the pot here, pull things out of the mixture. We've defined that as our base, meaning that's asur, that's not allowed. When can you actually separate something out? Well, obviously, it's not a mixture, and it's not a mixture of types, a mixture of all the same things. You can pull out a piece of cake that's a different size, smaller size, because again, we've said it's just a mixture of all the same type. So therefore, again, it's not a problem. Or if you don't have a mixture, if you have things that are spread out, if you happen to have a whole bunch of different mixed nuts, but they're not sitting in a bowl, they're spread out across your table because they've been spilled over by your little boy who just happened to think it was really cool to dump everything out. Well, now it's no longer a mixture, it's sitting on your table all over the place. So picking out specific things like that wouldn't be an issue because there's no mixture. So no mixture, no distinct types, well, then there's nothing to worry about. But even if you do have a mixture of types, there are times when it is permissible to be able to do selection, to go ahead and be able to pick things out. So, one situation when things are permitted is when you have all of the following together. So if you have all the following, meaning these three things together, then you have a permissible situation where you can do selection. But you got to have all three. So first of all is if you're using your hands, or you're using an implement which is not specially designed for doing selection, and it would be something that is no more efficient than your hands. So for example, using a fork to go ahead and select out carrots from your soup isn't going to be any more efficient than pulling out your carrots with your fingers. Again, except for the fact that you may burn your fingers, they may get disgustingly dirty, and may create problems in your home. Now, that's another issue. But again, using your hands, and so again, three things together make it permissible. Number one, with one's hands. Number two, good from the bad. So again, if a person is dealing with a situation where he is using his hands to pull out the good from the bad, for example, given that, remember, let's go back to that case where we had that bowl of nuts. So now you have this bowl of all these nuts, and you only want to eat the cashews. So if you use your hands, meaning you're just sticking your hand into the mixture and you're pulling out a cashew to eat, not a problem. Even though you're not going to be picking intentionally any of the other nuts in that bowl. And the third thing is that the cashew you're taking out in this particular example is something you're going to be putting into your mouth right away. Now, this is significant. And why is it significant? Because if you were to be taking out the cashews, even though it's the good from the bad, and you were going to be putting them aside to be eaten, let's say, in the afternoon, and this is the morning, that's still not allowed. Most people don't realize that. Taking the good from the bad can still be a violation. All right, so in terms of, again, if all three of those are together, again, with one's hand or implement, that's a direct extension of the hand, that's no more efficient than the hand, or again, taking good from the bad and for immediate use, those three together create a permissible situation where you can do a separation, where you can pull one thing out of the group. Pulling out the carrots, little tiny pieces of carrots from your soup may not be a problem. Again, why? Again, first of all, they're big carrots, there's no mixture involved. But even if it's smaller carrots mixed with all kinds of other vegetables, whatever else have you, if you could pick them out with your hands easily, and you just happen to use a fork to pick them out instead, and again, you're taking the good from the bad, you want those carrots, and you're going to eat it immediately, no problem. Fifth principle, it's permitted to lift off the bad to get to the wanted good. So again, it's permissible to remove the bad off the top to get to the good, provided that doing this isn't going to improve the mixture. So for example, you have a box of shmorah matzahs, you flip open the top, and unfortunately, especially when you live far away from the matzah factories, most of the matzahs are broken. So you want up the top, the broken matzahs, in order to get towards the bottom, where hopefully, please be God, you will actually find a matzah that has some semblance of a whole matzah. So in that situation, no problem. You start pulling off the top until you get to the bottom. Now you can't just dive your hand into the box and pull out the whole one, as that would be a problem. But again, taking off the top broken pieces till you get to the good one, that's all right. It's called siluk, that's removing, and removing is not selecting, and that's all right. The way also that you can get around things is, let's say the principle number four, with one's hand, good from the bad, for immediate use, or just removing the bad off the top to leave you with the good isn't going to be possible. For example, let's say you have a cluster of silverware sitting in your drying rack, and you want to go ahead and put those silverware away into their designated compartments in your drawer. So what can you do? Well, what you can do is grab that mixture of forks and knives and spoons, whatever else have you, and you can go ahead and just throw it on your counter and cause them to spread out. So what you've actually done is you've unmixed the mixture. Remember, again, it's not, now they're not mingled. They're not mingled together anymore. There's no mixture. And in order to have borer, you have to have a mixture of types. So that eliminates that problem. So again, once you spread out the silverware, then you can go ahead and at liberty pick what you want. The other possibility is removing bad with the good still attached. So you've got that little brown spot on the banana, and you just can't see yourself biting and eating around it. So what can you do? You can go ahead and take your knife or whatever else have you, and you can cut away, but taking out part of the good banana, what a terrible waste of a good banana, but you can go ahead and cut out the good banana along with the brown spot that's in it and throw that all away, or put it again, or you may put it aside. This way later on you can give it to an animal or whatever else, this sort of thing. The seventh principle And then again, so this is from 4 through 7, we're dealing with ways to avoid the whole borer situation. Is actions done at the time of eating and directly into one's mouth are permissible. And when we say permissible into one's mouth, it also means permissible into one's kid's mouth, or putting it for a child to take and eat. So, for example, if you have fish that has bones in it, you'd be allowed to separate out the bones from the fish in order to be able to hand it to your child so that your child then could take and eat it. A person, normally speaking, you're eating watermelon, but if you happen to dust aside a watermelon pit before you stick it into your mouth, that's not a problem because, again, as you're pushing this aside, you could go ahead and stick directly into your mouth. Same sort of thing. So, again, actions done at the time of eating and directly into one's mouth, meaning it's directly into the process of eating. You happen that you want to pick certain food off your plate and all that sort of thing. So, this also presents a permissible situation. So, let's go to a couple of practical examples. And like I said, these principles will help us get by and are good as a review and as our overview. But this is certainly one melacha, one specific labor that an entire course could be dedicated to. But again, let's just go ahead and do a couple of do's and don'ts like we always do. So the first group, let's do some do's. So you could take a bug out of your soup with a portion of soup at the same time. That's the example we just gave before. You can peel an orange to eat now. Now that's okay. You're going to eat the orange. So you're going to peel away the bad. So this is bad from good, but it's okay. Because again, you're going to eat the orange right now. So that's going to be a right. You're using your hand. You're not using some specialized instrument or else have you. This is no problem. This is okay. If, by the way, you decide to peel that orange so that it should be eaten at another meal sometime later on, that would be a problem. So again, just be cognizant about that. Situations can change based on when you plan on making use of it. Three things again. Just remember, one's hand's good for the bad for immediate use. No problem. Pick out the chocolate bonbon you like and enjoy. You go ahead and four across, three down. There's the chocolate bonbon with the cherry inside. Enjoy. Take out broken shmora matzah, as we said before, by removing the bad off the top and just grabbing what's left there, which is the good one. Not a problem. Don'ts. What can't you do? Take out spoiled cherries from a bowl of cherries. What we see here is that mixtures can even be the same items, but they're different types. These are spoiled ones, and these are good ones. So again, you can't go in. Of course, everything here is edible. Even the spoiled ones may still be edible, but you don't want it. So, same problem. A person, again, is not allowed to pick out the spoiled cherries, leaving himself with a bowl of nice, wonderful cherries to eat. Remove out peanuts or any other item from a bowl of mixed nuts to discard. Same sort of thing. You don't want the peanuts. You never understand why there's so many peanuts in those mixed nuts. At the point, you want to get rid of those peanuts. You want to reduce the number of peanuts. That's a problem. You can't just pick them out to discard. If you want to pick them out to eat immediately, no problem. If you want to pick out the other nuts to eat immediately, no problem. But you can't just pick them out to discard. As we said before, cutting out the brown spots from a banana or an apple or anything else like that, no problem. Just take out again. Some of the good from the good with the bad would be fine, but just taking away the brown spot itself would be a problem. Take the bones out of fish. In other words, if you're going to go ahead and pull the bone out of the fish to then be able to later on consume, that's going to be an issue. So ideally, you take your fork, stick it in the fish, pull out the flesh and eat and enjoy. Take out one sock from a pile of socks that doesn't belong. Let's say you have a pile of all these brown or black socks, and all of a sudden you find a blue sock, and you're just overtaken by the inability to deal with the fact that there's a foreign sock in the pile, and you just have to remove it. That would not be allowed. Just pulling out that, again, that separate sock, you have a mixture of types here, and pulling out the sock, the bad sock, is going to be, again, a kesubora, and it's not allowed. Putting laundry into separate drawers, that's a problem. You happen to have laundry that was cleaned before Shabbat and it's sitting in a pile and you want to go ahead and start putting it away in its place, that's an issue. Putting out cutlery from the drying rack to put into its proper slot in the drawer, as we saw before, that's an issue. But again, there's ways to solve the problem, such as spreading out the silverware and then picking out the ones, in other words, now that it's spread out, it's no longer a mixture, then go ahead and take them and put them away. And of course the option we already said, which is peeling an orange to eat later. So again, because of the fact that it's not for now, That's a problem. So with that, we conclude winnowing and selecting sorting. As I said, when it comes to this specific mitzvah of, borer, the situation that exists is that, again, and it's very complex, but these principles, and particularly the ones that allow us to avoid the borer situation, should be kept in mind at all times. And God willing, at some point, we'll do a little mini course just on borer and some of the other more complicated melachot. God willing, as each and every one of us strives every day to be more careful on every Shabbat, as it says that if the Jewish people were to keep kehalacha in the proper way, Shabbat, the Mashiach would be here, and God willing, he will be here speedily in our days.